Pour yourself a cold one.
Let's drink them, huh?
And listen to Russ Tucker and Philadelphia Eagles film junkie Fran Duffy break down the top college prospects on another tasty edition of The College Draft.
Yeah, it's Daddy Soda time, baby. We are rolling in the month of June and very, very excited about today's podcast because this was actually emailed in by one of you guys. Ian Scotland said, you know, Ross, people always say, and Fran, he said your name too, Fran, just so you know. He said, people always talk about how you really can't evaluate a draft for 4 or 5 years, but then nobody ever actually does it. And so you and I, Fran, thought it would be a great idea here on the College Draft Podcast. Of course, he is Fran Duffy, the Philadelphia Eagles scouting video guru. I'm Ross Tucker, former NFL offensive lineman. We're all over Twitter. He's at FDuffy3. I'm at Ross Tucker NFL. What I was hoping we could do, Fran, is go through the 2012 first round and see what lessons, if any, should be gleaned from it, that we should take from it. And I also think it brings up an interesting question about how you discuss and decide whether or not a pick is a success. In other words, I don't know that people would say, you know, I don't think anybody would say at this point RG3 was a good pick by the Redskins, like to trade up and all that for RG3. But he brought them, Fran, a division championship that they hadn't had in quite some time, and a buzz and a hope and a vibe around that team that they hadn't had in years and years. So I don't know. I mean, from a strictly business standpoint, I could see someone making the argument that it was a good pick.
Yeah, I mean, for the 27-month span that, you know, he was a viable starting option for them, I would imagine that they netted a good chunk of money, you know, with jersey sales and all the buzz around the team. But you're right. I mean, and that's one of the things that I think is most interesting about this exercise is talking about how do you judge success when you're talking about an NFL draft. And we always say, oh, you got to go wait 3-4 years. But, you know, is it if you got one or two good players? Is it if you got three starters from a draft? Is it how many guys get second contracts after the rookie contracts expire? Do you get great value on day three? Is it what about the situations where, yeah, you picked a GM picked a player, he didn't work out in the first scenario, but then he goes somewhere else and has a ton of success? I mean, is that on the GM? Is that on the person that made the selection, or is it more on the coach? It's such an interesting thing. And one of the guys I always think of when we talk about this is Carson Palmer. You know, Carson Palmer, how many playoff games did he win with the Cincinnati Bengals? But I would imagine, yeah, it was a number one pick. Did he get him a Super Bowl? Did he take them far into the playoffs? No. But he's been a very, very good starting quarterback throughout his career, albeit he did have some injury issues midway through his career in Cincinnati. But it's just a very interesting exercise once you start talking about draft history and draft grades, even looking back 4 or 5 years.
Well, speaking of exercises, before we dive into this, I think everybody should exercise their brain a little bit and their mind by going to BetDSI.com and making whatever they're into a little bit more interesting. Look, no matter what it is, any sporting event, heck, they got stuff for the presidential race with Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. I mean, anything you want to make more interesting, more entertaining, or to place a wager on, you can do that at BetDSI.com. And best yet, if you use the code DRAFT10, you get $10 free. I mean, so $10 free to play on the Belmont, which is this weekend. That should be the big push, really. I mean, the Belmont this weekend, it's going to be awesome. No, I know, not every horse in it. Nyquist isn't in it. And I know that there's no Triple Crown. But believe me, you go to BetDSI.com and you put some money on it, or even if you put in the code DRAFT10 or TUCKER10, it will make that horse race more interesting. I can promise you that much. Speaking of promise, let's get into it, Fran. I'm glad we're doing this, man. You know, I want to try to get lessons from this. So we're going to go through the first round. The first pick, Andrew Luck, was kind of a no-brainer. But I think the lesson there, Fran, might be that, hey, just because you have early success doesn't necessarily mean, you know, you're on easy street. I think through 3 years, he was on the right path, but yet last year, I thought he took a pretty decent step back in his play, even without, you know, whatever you want to say about the guys around him.
Well, I think this may not just be a draft lesson, but more of a team building lesson. One team does not one quarterback make, you know, and I think that, yeah, he obviously, look, he's one of the most talented quarterbacks in the NFL, surely in terms of guys that have only been in the league for a few years. But you need to be able to surround him not only with receivers, which obviously they've tried to do. They drafted two tight ends with Andrew Luck, but also with the offensive line help. And that's been their Achilles heel over the last couple of years. They put some assets into that group this past offseason, and we'll see how that comes to play for them in this fall. But that has been the issue with them, is protecting Andrew Luck. And so that might be the biggest lesson for me looking at this pick in hindsight.
We talked a little bit about RG3, and obviously he was the number two pick with the Redskins. We'll see how that works out over time in Cleveland. Speaking of Cleveland, they had moved up from 4 to 3, and they took Trent Richardson. And this is an interesting one to me, Fran, because people can call it a bust and make fun of the Browns and blah, blah, blah. Make fun of the Colts for trading a first-round pick for him. But I don't remember a single person having reservations about Trent Richardson coming out of Alabama. Do you?
No, not really. I think everybody really was all in on Trent Richardson. Now, you know, looking at it now, what are the issues that forced Trent Richardson from the NFL? Look, he had the knee issue after his rookie season. But the big thing with him was, can he create yards on his own? And yeah, whether he was in Cleveland or whether he was in Indianapolis, the big issue was, yeah, after the first two or three yards that the offensive line got for him, what else was he able to do after that? And that was the question we asked with Derrick Henry and some of these other bigger backs that have come out in the last couple of years since Trent Richardson. If you can't create yards for yourself, whether that's through breaking tackles, you know, in the big style of running back play, or through wiggle and shake and make you miss ability in the smaller sense, you got to be able to create yards for yourself. And that was the main issue with Trent Richardson. And that he's the card right now that everybody plays when you talk about, oh, well, you shouldn't draft a running back high. Look at Trent Richardson. I'll be interested to see if that holds true over the next 5-10 years.
Yeah, it's interesting to say the least, because everybody's high on him. The next one is an interesting case too, Fran, and that's Matt Khalil, who was very good his first year, first couple years, and then he's kind of trailed off. You know, that's kind of rare, you know, that a guy starts out so well and then struggles.
Yeah, you know, it's, I don't know all the details of that situation, but I would imagine, Ross, and I don't know how often you've seen that when you played, when you have a young guy that has some success early and then trails off, is that a mental thing? You know, is that something where, you know, maybe he got a little too big for his britches and maybe got, you know, his head grew up? I don't know. I don't know what the situation is there. But look, Khalil was viewed as almost a can't miss guy coming out of USC because he had the size, he had the feet, you know, he had the length. I mean, everybody loved the physical tools of Matt Khalil. It just hasn't turned out to be that kind. He just hasn't turned out to be that kind of player so far in the NFL.
Number five, the Jacksonville Jaguars took Justin Blackmon. And I think the lesson there is one of off the field issues that it's one of the things that we talk about that we don't have as much access to leading up to the draft each year, but is very important. And then number six was the Dallas Cowboys taking Morris Claiborne, who really hasn't been that impressive as an NFL player. What do you think happened there, Fran?
You know, I think it's been a mix. He had some injury issues early on in his career, and then it's just been inconsistency. You know, he gave up a lot of big plays when he was on the field. They tried in a number of different ways to replace him, you know, whether it was through the free agent market, through the trade market, then also through the draft. I mean, they drafted Byron Jones last year. Obviously, they used him in a different role than what we've seen from Mo Claiborne, but the fact remains they've continued to add pieces into the secondary. They were rumored to be really hot on Jalen Ramsey if Ezekiel Elliott was not available to them in this past draft. So it's interesting watching this, Mo, because he was another player. I mean, this draft was really viewed as really heavy at the top. You had the two quarterbacks, but there were a lot of players that people were very high on, with Trent Richardson and Khalil and Mo Claiborne, that people viewed as can't-miss guys, and it just didn't work out that way. Claiborne would be in that group.
There's another good lesson, really good lesson, at number seven, and that is one of Mark Barron, who was basically a bust with the team that drafted him, the Bucks, and now, as more of like a hybrid outside linebacker type, Fran, he's a really good player that the Rams just gave a really good second contract to. He might be the most interesting lesson to talk about in this whole draft.
Well, this goes back to a term that Greg Cosell used a lot with you on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast this past season, was scheme adaptability and how coaches view players. And, you know, the Bucks, they traded down. They were initially in the five spot. They trade down. They pick up an extra fourth-round pick from the Jacksonville Jaguars, and they actually use that fourth-round pick to move up and take Doug Martin. So you applaud them for that. But they trade down, and they take Mark Barron, and they shoehorn him into that safety spot where he wasn't a good fit. He wasn't able to hold up on the back end. I evaluated him a couple times when the Eagles were preparing to play the Tampa Bay Bucks, and you just saw that he just was not comfortable on the back end. He could not hold up to the NFL receivers and the deep end of the field. So he gets ends up in St. Louis. They move him to linebacker in a sub-package role, and he thrives. And Cosell actually talked numerous times to me this season about how well Barron had looked playing closer to the line of scrimmage and how comfortable he looked down there. So this is a situation where, and we've talked about this with players like Jeremy Cash and other safeties like that over the past couple of years and over the past few months for sure on this podcast, is adaptability to scheme. How does a player fit into your scheme? Just because he did something at the college level does not mean he's going to be able to do it consistently at the NFL level, especially if you're going to have to project some of his traits to fit your scheme. You want to eliminate as much projection as possible, put him in a situation to succeed.
The next picks, it's pretty interesting because these are all guys that either have second contracts or will be getting them soon. Miami quarterback Ryan Tannehill, who I think at eight, you know, they gave him that second contract to the point where they're obviously pretty happy with him as their starting quarterback, although I don't know that he's in the top half of the league yet. Luke Kuechly at nine, Stephon Gilmore at 10, Dontari Poe at 11. Of course, Carolina took Kuechly, Buffalo took Gilmore, Kansas City took Dontari Poe at 11. The Eagles took Fletcher Cox at 12. He's been fantastic. I mean, 8 through 12, Fran, is a heck of a lot better than 2 through 6 or 2 through 7.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that Kuechly and Cox are the two best players in this draft. When you get away from Andrew Luck, you could argue that Kuechly and Cox are the two best players overall in this class, and both those guys have turned out to be top three players at their position for sure, and the team's got great value there. You know, Carolina stayed put, and they took Kuechly. The Eagles targeted Cox. They made a trade up with Seattle. They gave up a couple picks in the process, but were able to secure a guy that was a Pro Bowl and an All-Pro talent in Fletcher Cox. So good job by all those teams capitalizing on the value there in that 8 to 15 range.
Michael Floyd went number 13 to Arizona. Number 14, Michael Brockers went to the Rams, part of the haul they had gotten from the Redskins. Number 15 was Bruce Irvin to Seattle. Number 16, Quentin Coples, who I think he's on a roster somewhere. I just don't know where that is. Floyd, Brockers, nice players. I don't know that they're stars or that they ever will be, but I think solid starters. Irvin is a really unique player, and Copels was one of those guys, Fran, that had all of the physical measurables and tools, but there was just that question there about his passion, his love, and I think love of the game. And I think that's something that Rex Ryan thought he could get out of him, and obviously he didn't.
Yeah, and don't forget, you know, Copels was considered throughout the pre-draft process, you know, we'll say in that fall and then early spring, he was considered to be a top five, top 10 talent, you know, in terms of his length and his movement. The question, like you said, was the motor, the passion, you know, does he have that love for the game? And that kind of held true because he just hasn't turned into the prospect that many had hoped he would be coming out of North Carolina. And Irvin is another guy too, Ross, that, you know, we had the discussion about Mark Barron. You know, Irvin was very much an undersized, kind of viewed as a sub-package rusher. And I was really surprised to see the Seattle Seahawks, when they trade with the Eagles, they trade down and they get Bruce Irvin. How are they going to use him? And they used him in a very, very specific way. And it just goes to show you that if a team has a plan for a player, we've talked about this with Deion Buchanan in the past with the Arizona Cardinals. If you have a plan for him and you're able to execute that plan, it makes every pick make sense. It just doesn't always work out that way. And actually, that's a good way to kind of juxtapose those two players is, you know, Mark Barron was selected by Tampa Bay. They did not have a plan for him, and he was miscast in that scheme. Bruce Irvin gets selected and is used perfectly. And now he wasn't brought back. He didn't sign a second contract, but he ended up signing a huge deal with the Oakland Raiders. So two interesting selections there.
The next four, we've got Dre Kirkpatrick, 17, to the Bengals. Melvin Ingram, 18, to the Chargers. Shay McClellan went 19 to the Bears. And 20 was the Titans with Kendall Wright. Kirkpatrick's in the lineup now. Ingram's had some injury issues. Kendall Wright's been a solid player for the Titans. The one I want to ask you about is, Fran, is Shay McClellan and what you think happened there. It seems like they've tried to move him to five different positions to try to find something that works.
Well, you're asking a guy that, and I know that, you know, this may sound like it's revisionist history. I did not like that pick whatsoever for Chicago when they made it. So to say that I'm not surprised that situation, you never root for a guy to fail, but I'm not surprised that situation turned out the way it did. I agree with you that they were trying to find ways to get him on the field and all the different roles that he has played throughout his career there in Chicago. It's not all that surprising to me. I agree, though. He was kind of a fish out of water. Was he going to be big enough to play down the line of scrimmage as a defensive end? Was he athletic enough to play in space as a linebacker? Could he be instinctive enough to play inside as a stack backer off the ball? Those were all questions that he was unable to answer during his time in Chicago.
Yeah, not good, to say the least. If you look at the next few picks, some more interesting ones. Chandler Jones went 21 to the Patriots. I remember that was sort of a surprise pick. There hadn't been a lot of chat about him. The Browns took Brandon Weeden at 22. And then a couple offensive linemen. The Lions took Riley Reiff at 23. And the Steelers took David DeCastro at 24. Boy, that's got to sting a team like the Bears to see that Chandler Jones, the player that he became, just a couple picks later. We know about Weeden. Reiff is a, I don't know if you call him solid, serviceable, whatever. He's a starting tackle in the NFL. And DeCastro had some early struggles, Fran, but now he's become one of the better guards in the league.
Yeah, and he was such a good player at Stanford. Hey, let me ask this question off this slew of players. This is the one question I've got for you, Ross. How do you feel as a former player and also obviously as an analyst of the game now, how do you feel about prospects that are overaged that come into the league? You know, guys that like a Brandon Weeden or guys that just play, maybe they're playing at the college level in their mid-20s and they're going up against guys that are 18, 19, 20 years old. How do you project that to the league? How do you compare a player like a Brandon Weeden or any other position where a guy's got 3, 4, 5, 6 years on some of the competition he's going up against?
Yeah, well, I think number one, it should be a pretty significant advantage from maturity, you know, physical body, even just if you're a 23, 24-year-old going against a bunch of 19, 20-year-olds, there should be a pretty big difference. And I don't know if you care that much about it from a first contract standpoint, but, you know, if it comes time to give a guy a second contract, do you want to give a second contract to a guy that's probably going to be on the downhill, you know, a descending player at that point?
Yeah, that's a very, very good point as well. I didn't even mention it. We don't have to deal with it as much at the running back spot. It happens from time to time, but when you look at some of these other players that have come out and have been overaged, it's very, very interesting. And I know some people that say, if a guy's older than 24, I'm not even touching him coming out of college. I'd rather go somewhere else, just because I know that I've got a player that I can still project and work with, as opposed to someone who was going up against an inferior talent at the next level. It's a very, very interesting question.
The next four picks, you've got 25. The Patriots took Dante Hightower, who's been a nice player for them. 26, the Texans took Whitney Mercilus, who has been excellent. 27, the Bengals took Kevin Zeitler, who's been very good as well. And 28, the Green Bay Packers took Nick Perry. I think it's probably fair to say that Perry has been disappointing, given that he was a first-round pick. So it's just, I mean, you look at the Bears and the Packers taking McClellan and Perry, and you compare and contrast that to the Texans taking Mercilus and the Patriots taking Chandler Jones. That is a big difference between those guys.
Yeah, and when you look at – that's typically what happens is when you start to look at positions in a draft where there are a ton of players that go early, it's almost a guarantee that some of those guys are going to bust out. That's just the law of averages say that that's going to happen. And then you get into the second round of that same position, and you see guys like Courtney Upshaw and Andre Branch. Kendall Reyes was a DN that was, you know, he was more of a defensive lineman, but you get the idea. There are some of these other edge rushers that came off the board in the early second round that also started to fall off. And so you had some hits there in that range in that late first, early second, but you also had your share of misses. Unfortunately for Chicago, they had the kind of the pick of the litter there with a lot of these guys, and they were unable to pick the right guy.
Last four picks starts with a good one. The Vikings took Harrison Smith at 29. Then maybe the worst pick of them all, the Niners taking A.J. Jenkins at 30. I don't know if he ever even played for them. The Bucs got Doug Martin at 31. They hopped in front of the Giants, who then settled for David Wilson at 32, who showed some juice but had injury issues. Man, the Giants seem to have a chronic problem of teams leaping in front of them to take the guy that a lot of people think that they might want. But how about Harrison Smith and A.J. Jenkins as back-to-back picks, Fran?
Yeah, and Jenkins ended up getting traded for one of my favorite players from, I think it was the previous draft or the draft after, the kid from Pitt. I want to say his name was Baldwin. I absolutely loved that kid. And Jenkins, he was completely off the radar. I don't know that anybody thought he was a first-round pick coming out of Illinois. And that was definitely the shocker of the first round. And then, yeah, the run on running backs to close the draft out was very, very interesting as well with Doug Martin and David Wilson. Wilson was really explosive, and then, like you said, that back injury really cost him.
What teams did really well? I mean, I know we went through the first round, but from a team perspective, what teams really drafted well in 2012, Fran?
Well, you see, and this is the discussion we had earlier was how do you gauge the success? You know, do you look at a team like Seattle, where, look, they drafted Bobby Wagner in the second round. They had a plan for Bruce Irvin in the first round, trading down. They picked up extra picks and were able to get guys like Jay Howard and Lane, the corner, later in the draft with that trade. But, look, it comes down to a quarterback and one player. They drafted Russell Wilson in the third round. That alone makes that a good draft for Seattle. You know, and even you look at Indianapolis. Look, it was a layup for them to draft Andrew Luck, but if they had gone the other way and taken RG3, how different would things have been? Andrew Luck with number one, yeah, they drafted Kobe Fleener. They drafted Dwayne Allen and T.Y. Hilton in round three. but it all comes back to Andrew Luck and the success that they had. St. Louis was able to get three starters at least out of that deal that they made with the Washington Redskins. They get Michael Brockers. They drafted Janoris Jenkins in round two, and then Trumaine Johnson in round three, who they just franchise tagged. They didn't bring back Jenkins, so really they've got two starters right now out of that group, but it's a really interesting way to look at that as they make that trade down, and you look at all the players they acquired in that trade, and whether it's Greg Robinson and Stedman Bailey and Alec Ogletree and all these guys, it was a great haul for the Rams in that RG3 deal. The Eagles did extremely well in that draft. You had Fletcher Cox, Michael Kendricks, and Vinnie Curry, three of their cornerstones on this defense here in Philadelphia. They also drafted Nick Foles and Brandon Boykin, Bryce Brown, guys that had some good years for them during the course of their rookie contracts. I love what Denver did. And you look at, obviously, they won the Super Bowl this year. Look what the Denver Broncos did in this draft. Round two, they draft Derek Wolfe and Brock Osweiler. In round three, you get Ronnie Hillman. In round five, you get Malik Jackson. In round six, you get Danny Trevathan. And that's why it's not always about all the first-round pick and how the team does. They built the core of that Super Bowl team. A lot of that was built. Yeah, sure, they supplemented that with some free agent hits, like guys like obviously Peyton Manning, and you bring in guys like T.J. Ward and Aqib Talib to supplement it. But the core of that team was built through the draft, and this is a great example of that. Miami, they drafted Olivier Vernon and Lamar Miller, Rishard Matthews. Great job of acquiring talent and being able to spot the talent. And you got to finish it up. You got to keep some of that talent in house. They kept Ryan Tannehill. They extended him, but they let Vernon go on a monster deal to the Giants. They let Lamar Miller walk to the Houston Texans, and Rishard Matthews leaves for the Tennessee Titans. So those would be the teams that really stood out to me in terms of success in this draft.
How about the teams that, you know, we know now in hindsight really struggled?
Well, Cleveland, you know, and I just got done saying it's not all about round one, but when you have two first-round picks, again, one of them was with the deal that they made with the Atlanta Falcons the year before and the Julio Jones monster trade-up deal. They select Trent Richardson, who they traded up for, and Brandon Weeden in round ones, which obviously that did not work out for them. They did a solid job in day two and three to kind of make up for it. They draft Mitchell Schwartz. They draft Travis Benjamin, but it's tough to overcome the loss of those two first-round picks. You know, San Diego, they draft Melvin Ingram in round one, who they're still waiting on to make an impact, Kendall Reyes in round two, and Brandon Taylor in round three. Jacksonville really struggled as well. They draft Blackman in round one. We talked about Andre Branch. They let go after this past season, and Brian Anger, the punter, in round three. Arguably the best player that they drafted, they didn't even retain him, and that was Brandon Marshall, the linebacker who ended up with the Denver Broncos. He might be the best player overall from that draft class and for the Jacksonville Jaguars, and he ended up not playing it down for them. The Giants have struggled as well. We talked about David Wilson. Reuben Randall was not brought back. J-Ron Hosley has been an okay player, but day three they didn't really offer much. And then San Francisco, you know, A.J. Jenkins was a shocker and didn't pan out. LaMichael James didn't really turn into much. Joe Looney was their next pick. Darius Fleming the next pick after that. So those would be the teams that struggled. It is very interesting, though, Ross, to go back and look at how some of these teams did years in advance.
Yeah, this is awesome. I really, really enjoyed this. I want to do 2013 like tomorrow. This was so fun. Instead, we will do this every year, but next week we're going to start to tell you guys exactly what you should be looking for and how you should be looking for it when you evaluate certain positions so that you have a better understanding of what we're saying. And so maybe you can even do this yourself on the College Draft Podcast. We will start our position scouting series with quarterbacks and the one and only Greg Cosell starting next week here. Other than that, for right now, the keg is kicked. We are all tapped out.
Thanks for enjoying your Frosty One while listening to the College Draft.
Chug, 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 chug.
Make sure you're also subscribing to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Fantasy Feast, and Even Money Podcasts, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.